Cosmetic Course Podcast, episode 18. In this episode, I'm going to be talking to David Eccleston about lower face Botox. So I'm talking today to David Eccleston, who's the clinical director of Medizin, which is a very successful clinic in the Midlands. He works as a GP 3 days a week and in the aesthetic sort of cosmetic practitioner 2 days a week, and he's been using Botox, as he tells me, since 1994. So he's one of the longest lasting, or been, you know, longest practicing practitioners. So thank you, David, for coming on today.
Good evening.
I just thought, you know, perhaps a good topic today might be to talk a little bit about lower face Botox, because it's a bit more of an advanced technique. How long have you been sort of using Botox for the lower face, David?
Well, started off using Botox in the classical area of the upper face in about 94, as you said earlier, but probably started using it in the lower face about 10, 11 years ago. I went to a fascinating presentation by Timothy Flynn from the States, and also Alistair and Jean Carruthers. Got a chance to talk to them afterwards, and found that this was really an area which seemed to be evolving quite fast in the States, but there were very few people either confident or competent enough to do it in the UK. So it's an area that I rapidly became interested in and starting evolving my own techniques.
Brilliant. Could you just tell me some of the areas you treat?
Well, really, the most important thing to understand in the lower face is where the muscles are. In the upper face, generally speaking, most people who are reasonably well trained can get a good predictable result most of the time. But in the lower face, particularly around the mouth angles, you've got some tiger territory. So I started off doing things like, for example, depressor anglioris, and that works very, very nicely, particularly in combination with hyaluronic acid fillers. Because by injecting at the base of the depressor, you can get a reduction in the downwards pull, and particularly those sort of marionette lines you see in combination with fillers, you get a really nice result. So that's really where I started, and then I started moving medially into mentalis, the so-called golf ball or apple dumpling chin, and mentalis responds very, very nicely, particularly if you've got a contracting chin which forms that little sort of bag of worms, and by injecting into there, I get a nice result. Started then moving upwards, do a bit of work around the mouth, but to be honest, even with my experience, I tend to find using toxins around the mouth is still fraught with problems, because if you underdose, you get no result at all, and if you overdose, you tend to get the problems associated with enunciation and drinking. So I tend really to stick to lasers and fillers around the mouth, sometimes with a small amount of toxin, just to improve the results. I've done treatment with injecting the depressor septinasi to improve the appearance of the drooping nasal tip. I've treated the top end of the beta labii superioris aliqui nasi to reduce gum show, the so-called gummy smile. That worked quite nicely. But again, very, very small doses required. And in more recent times, I've started actually straying backwards, moving into the masseter, and I've had some fabulous results from what I call masseteric planing or sculpting in people with a broad jawline, and moving on to the problems of bruxism, tension headache, etc. So that's just a few of the areas I've been working on.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been busy.
Absolutely, and I think what I've found is that although now there's a lot more people out there on the ground doing toxins in the upper face, and we all know about the controversies of Botox parties and nurses and doctors going around beauty salons, working away behind a curtain in probably somewhat inappropriate circumstances, and if you're only there every 6 weeks and there's a problem, the patient doesn't get the aftercare that they deserve. So I'm tending to find that ultimately, the lower face is probably where the business is growing, if anything, because it's a more specialized area, and quite sensibly, those who are relatively inexperienced in toxin use are a little bit more reluctant to stray into those areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you treat platysma much, the Nefertiti sort of lists?
Platysma is a lovely result. You have to choose the patients. If you've got a very sort of saggy neck with a lot of crepiness, then you're not going to get such a good result as if you've got relatively well-preserved elasticity of the skin. But if you've got well-defined platysmal bands, which can be seen when you get the patient to sort of forcibly tighten their neck and say the word E while tightening their jaw, if you can see well-defined platysmal bands, you can get a lovely result. And if you go particularly for the posterior band, you can quite significantly improve the angle of the jaw and the jawline by reducing the downward pull. So in relatively slim patients without too much excess fat, you can get quite a nice neck lift. I think someone has christened it the Nefertiti lift. Rarely do you get quite such a dramatic appearance as that precious Egyptian queen, but generally you can get quite a nice improvement if there isn't too much skin laxity and jowliness.
Okay, so could we just perhaps talk a little bit about the, you know, where your dose is, the type of toxin you use, and where you actually inject it right, for the Nefertiti lift?
Okay, I think the Nefertiti lift, the basic principle is what you're trying to do is weaken off the platysma where it inserts into the jawline, and it's a fairly superficial insertion. It's actually just underneath the skin into the epineurosis. So the principle is you look where the skin is being moved when the patient is tightening the neck, and generally speaking, I would prefer to use either Botox or Xeomin in this area. Generally, the lower face, I tend to use Botox and Xeomin. Upper face, I might be more inclined to use perhaps Dysport in the forehead. Reason for that is, in spite of all the arguments going on between the companies, when you've got 15, 16 years of experience of using all three toxins, you rapidly realize what's going on with each of them. I tend to find that the Ipsen Galderma product does seem to diffuse more, and if you want a nice, smooth relaxation, which you might want in the forehead, works really nicely for that. But in the lower face, the last thing I want is any movement, so I will tend to prefer to use one of the other two toxins.
So, David, could you just tell me a little bit about the Nefertiti lift, the toxins you use, the doses, and where you actually physically inject?
Okay, well, very, very briefly, I tend to prefer to use either Botox or Xeomin in the lower face because from my experience and also some clinical trial evidence, they do seem to diffuse less than the Dysport azulotoxin. However, that does have its advantages, perhaps in some areas of the upper face, like the forehead, where you may actually want greater diffusion. So I use all three toxins in my clinical practice. Obviously, the units aren't interchangeable, and they're measured according to different parameters. But generally speaking, I think most injectors would agree about 2.5 or 3 units of the Dysport toxin are roughly equivalent to 1 of the Botox and the Xeomin units. And that's what I generally tend to find in clinical practice. So let's sticking to the Botox Xeomin units. Generally speaking, the Nefertiti lift, I will use anything from 15 to 30 units each side in the posterior platysmal band and along the jawline. If the anterior platysmal band is prominent and needs treating, I will probably put another 10, 12 units in there. Generally, my rule of thumb is when doing Nefertiti lift and neck, I won't use more than 100 units in total, but generally, more likely, I'm round about the 50 to 60 units in total. The trick as well is to inject very, very superficially, because there are certainly occurrences where people have injected too deeply, and in fact the Carruthers, Jean Carruthers I was speaking to, she'd actually had a case of this where I think 200 units of Botox was used and the patient actually required a nasogastric feed because they lost the ability to swallow due to diffusion. So generally speaking, low dose is injected very, very superficially, literally just subdermally. And again, generally I like a fairly concentrated solution to minimize the hydrostatic spread. So when I'm injecting the neck, I'll usually use 1 mL of saline containing 100 units of toxin using the little insulin fixed needle syringes.
So you're giving really quite concentrated doses.
Absolutely. And you tend to find that if you're a good and technically experienced injector, you can get maximum toxin into exactly the point you want it. Whereas if perhaps you're less experienced or less confident, by using a more diluted solution, you do get that initial hydrostatic spread, and therefore potentially you're more likely to hit the muscles you want to, but also you're therefore more likely to hit some areas that you don't want to. So I tend to prefer a relatively concentrated solution of toxin in all areas of the face.
Yeah, could you just tell me, just enlarge a little bit on the hydrostatic spread? Could you just explain it to in a bit more detail?
Basically, ultimately, well, what I'm meaning by that is the bigger volume of fluid you inject, the more it's going to move, okay? So if you just imagine that you're, I don't know, inflating an airbed or something, as you start to pump, what happens is the air gradually spreads throughout the mattress. And it's the same principle. If you're injecting a bleb of toxin, let's say in the forehead, because there's relatively little space between the epidermis and the bone, you will actually see what looks like a mosquito bite sort of rising up. If you put a larger volume in, that mosquito bite will not only be taller, but it'll also be wider. And the toxin has actually not even started to diffuse. That's just the effect of the volume of solution. So the toxin has been carried across a wider area purely due to the volume of fluid you've injected.
Okay. Do you think there's much difference between the dispersion of Xeomin and the Allergan products?
In my experience, I'm not convinced there's any difference in the actual, should we say, field of effect, because diffusion and hydrostatic spread, one could have a whole new debate just on the meaning of those two words, but the actual field effect of those two toxins I've found is pretty much equivalent, and I will quite happily use the toxins interchangeably.
Absolutely. Okay, so do you inject at the jawline, below the jawline, and how many sites typically?
Well, typically when I'm doing the Nefertiti lift, what I'll do is I will look at the posterior platysmal band, and generally speaking, it will be at its narrowest point down at the bottom, and then it will become broader as it moves up towards the angle of the jaw. So generally speaking, I will usually mark off 2 or 3 or 4 points at the lower part and inject maybe 2 units in each point. And then as it starts to spread into a triangle approaching the jawline from below, I will then usually put 3 injection points, anything between 2 and 5 units per injection point, depending on how big and powerful the muscle is, along the jawline, and then fill in the triangle underneath with another 2 or 3 injections. So generally, I would say anything between 7 and 10 points, using anything between 15 and 40 units per side, depending on sex of the patient, male, female, power of the muscles, and effect of the downwards pull. And if necessary, I'll also be injecting an anterior band if it's visible.
Okay. And just a quick summary of the type of person who you might perform this technique on, the Nefertiti lift.
Some type of person would be someone who has relatively good quality skin, not too crepey and saggy, not too photo damaged, and who can clearly make those platysmal bands by grimacing with the corners of their mouth, forcibly trying to pull them down. So if you can demonstrate the platysmal bands easily and the platysmal bands demonstrate a downwards pull on the jaw, those are the ideal patients. But if you've got saggy, inelastic jowls, which don't move that much on neck movement, those patients are the ones who are least likely to be suitable and indeed satisfied if you do go ahead and treat them.
Okay. Now, I've got a theory, I don't know whether you agree with me on this, David, that you get more problems from toxins the deeper they're injected. Would you agree
with
that?
I would certainly agree with that, particularly in the lower face, because in the upper face, as I said earlier, you've got a nice big flat thin muscle called frontalis, and then you've got a couple of muscles lower down, the depressors and the corrugators and so on. So getting into those superficially is not particularly tricky, but when you actually look at patients who are having the glabella done, you will often see with inexperienced injectors, a couple of weeks later you get this so-called Mephisto look, or the Mr. Spock look, and usually that is caused by injecting laterally and too deeply, because the frontalis muscle is underneath the corrugators, and to get the tail of the corrugator, the most lateral part of the corrugator, you need to literally be just subdermal. That way you'll get the corrugator and you'll be treating the brow depressor. If you inject too deeply, or you try and be too careful and inject a little higher just to move away from that so-called dreaded eyebrow droop, which realistically very few of us see, if you move it upwards, you're actually hitting frontalis, and therefore you relax the middle part of frontalis, and you're actually then stimulating hyperinnervation of the lateral frontalis, which actually elevates the lateral brow. So that's an example of the importance of depth in the glabella. In terms of the lower face, far more complicated. If you look at a facial map, you'll see particularly around the corners of the mouth, the area called the modiolus, you've got 5 or 6 different muscles all effectively joining in the same point, and all of them are lying on top of each other and crisscrossing each other. And not only do you need to know the location of the muscle, but you also need to know the depth. So it's critical, particularly in the lower face. And generally speaking, superficial is safe. Deep is where you're going to start getting problems. The only muscles that I inject deeply in the face are the masseter in the lower face and the mentalis in the lower face. But all the other ones in the lower face, fairly superficial injections, probably no more than 1/3 of the length of a 5mm needle.
Brilliant. I mean, there's so much to talk about, isn't there, on the technique. Well, I suppose we could go on forever. But could you just tell me one other area I'm very interested to cover in this episode is the depressor, you know, at the corner of the mouth. Could you tell me about when you treat that? Would you use Botox first? How you use Botox and fillers in those areas?
Absolutely. Well, depressor anguliaris is one of those muscles that the French have a very good explanation for it. And the literal translation is these are called bitterness lines, because it makes the possessor of those lines look sour, bitter, miserable. And a lot of patients come to see me saying, my friends tell me to cheer up, and, you know, I'm happy. But I'm just aware now I've got these sort of lines that move down from the corners of my mouth. And those are caused by a combination combination of volume loss, descent of the fat pads of the face, but also the downwards pull of the depressor anguliaris. Now that is inserted in the modiolus, which is an anchor point to the corner of the mouth on both sides, and it reaches a point there, and then it's anchored along the bottom of the front of the jawbone with the broad part facing downwards. So effectively, this is an equilateral triangle with a long side along the jaw. So the higher up you inject it, the less likely you are to hit the muscle accurately, and the more likely you are to knock off other muscles around the modiolus. So what I generally do is I will move a centimeter lateral from the corner of the mouth, and then at least a centimeter downwards, probably, in all honesty, anything up to 2 centimeters downwards, so I'm almost on the jawline. And that proves equally effective because you're very much more likely to hit the muscle because it's broader down there, but also you are further away from the other muscles, like the bottom of zygomaticus, risorius, and so on, so you're far less likely to create a rather odd-looking asymmetric smile. Generally speaking, fairly superficial injection technique, probably no more than a couple of millimeters underneath the skin. I'll usually start off very carefully, 2 units on each side of Botox serum in units, anything up to 5 or 6 of Dysport if I were to use it. Generally speaking, the dose is pretty important, and in the lower face, I tend to start off fairly low. So if I were injecting in the lower part of the depressor anguliaris, I'll probably start off with a couple of units of the Botox serum in units, or maybe 5 or 6 of the Dysport units. And I would inject maybe 2 or 3 millimeters underneath the skin. And what that would do, it would be a low enough dose to be safe, a small enough volume to be pretty sure of not diffusing too much or spreading, and you get a pretty predictable result without interfering with the muscles attached to the modiolus. And if the result is equivocal or not particularly impressive, then I'll happily put some more in. Generally speaking, if you increase it any more than sort of 5 or 6 Botox equivalent units, the chances of affecting close by muscles is increased. I think the most I've ever used in a depressor is 10 units in a male. But generally speaking, women, I will tend to use 4 or 5 units on each side, and that works very, very nicely. In terms of combination with the fillers, it is quite safe to inject both fillers and toxin at the same time. I would generally speaking put the filler in first, purely because it's my practice, once I put the filler in place, just to massage out any unevenness or lumps or bumps to give a smooth result. And the last thing I want to be doing when I put some toxin in DAO is to be massaging the area. So I'll put the filler in first, and then I'll put superficial injection of the toxin in afterwards. And I always make it my principle to photograph the patients before any of that treatment and then bring them back 2 weeks later for re-photographing and also any adjustments just in case there's any resultant asymmetry.
Brilliant. And the effect of injecting the DA is really just to sort of turn the corners of the mouth up, isn't it?
Exactly. It's designed to just remove that downwards pull on the mouth corner, but leave all the other smiling muscles intact. And what you can then get, you tend to find that when the patient is at rest, they've got a less of a downwards pull there. And certainly when they smile, their mouth corners will tend to go up nicely. The only concern we would have is if you go too anteriorly when you're injecting DAO, and particularly if you're too high up, you risk hitting the depressor labii. And what then happens is you lose proper function of the sulcus of the lower jaw, and patients typically will find that they get food trapped in the area between the lower lip and the front teeth, and that can be quite an unpleasant thing, having to actually scoop out the remains of the dinner party from inside the lower lip. So if you're getting that result, it means you're going too anteriorly and probably too deeply as well. You can get the same problem if you're injecting mentalis and you go too laterally. Again, you can hit depressor labii. So that's a muscle to be avoided if possible.
So that sort of lies between the mentalis and the DAO.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, David, I think that's been absolutely fascinating. The only pity is we haven't got more time. If it's okay with you, what we'll talk about in future episodes, I think, is other areas. I'm particularly interested in hearing about masseter treatments. So thank you very much for joining us today, and I look forward to having you back on the podcast next time.
It's my pleasure, Adrian. Bye now.
So thank you very much for listening to the podcast, and a big thank you to David for taking the time today to talk to us. If you'd like to leave any feedback on the podcast, and if you'd like me to ask any questions, clinical questions to David, or any management issues to Ron or the other contributors, please email me at adrian@cosmeticcourses.co.uk, or alternatively, you can use our fancy new phone line, which is 0870 490 7385, and if you do that, we'll be able to play your message on the podcast, and that way you'll gain a little bit of notoriety as well. So again, thanks for listening. We hope you'll be able to tune into the next episode, and I'll be talking to David a lot more about other areas of the lower face which you can treat.